afternoon. I'd like to call the meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. It's 1:05 p.m. Today is Monday, February 6th, 2017. Members present today are Representative Birch, Representative Drummond, Representative Johnson, Representative Parrish, Representative Rauscher, Representative Tallarico, Vice Chair Westlake, myself, Representative Josephson, and Representative Tarr, co-chair. Please let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Assisting us today is our recording secretary, Deborah Tillinghast, and our LIO moderator, Greg Payne, if I've got his title right. And I bet I do. They will be joining us during our committee meeting to ensure we have accurate minutes, clear audio and video, and smooth telephonic testimony. Today we will be hearing for the first time House Bill 40 on trapping near trails, as introduced by myself. I will be turning the gavel over to Co-Chair Tarr for a presentation. There will be some invited testimony. We actually, although we sort of inadvertently asked for, somehow the clerk believed we asked for public hearing testimony. At any rate, we may take a couple calls, but that isn't really, it isn't our plan to get anywhere near through that. But there are three invitees to testify. At about 2:15 or 2:30 or the appropriate time, we will retake up House Bill 6. And we'll take public testimony and try to take any amendments today. We can carve out more time in the schedule next week for those matters, that is both House Bill 40 and House Bill 6, if necessary. And it will be likely, it will be necessary. We have a committee substitute for House Bill 40, and it is version U. And so, I have that. Madam Co-Chair, if you will offer a motion as to a committee substitute, not a sponsor substitute, but it's going to be version U.
Thank you. I'd like to move the committee adopt committee substitute back 30-LS0168/U.
So this motion has been made to adopt committee substitute as the working document of the bill, and generally there's an objection to hold it.
I will object, Mr. Chairman, for purpose of discussion, and possibly you can give us an explanation why you want to do a committee substitute.
Right. So at this point, I am going to turn over the gavel to Madam Co-Chair, and I will gavel out.
So we should be at ease. And to put himself on the record and explain the difference in the committee substitute.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Andy Josephson, District 17, for the record. I think I'll start with inviting my aide, Megan Rowe, to describe the changes between the version that you have and that was previously published, which is either D, version D or O, and the current version U.
So the difference between version O, oh, I'm sorry. My name is Megan Rowe. I'm a staffer for Representative Josephson. The difference between version O and version U is that version O was incorrectly labeled as a sponsor substitute. So we got it redrafted today to be a committee substitute. That was just a procedural change in order to hear it today without reintroducing it on the floor. The substantive difference occurs between versions D and O and D and U. Version D was the one that was originally introduced. What's changed from version D from U is that we have added a section, section 1, and that section imposes a requirement that a tag issued by Fish and Game be affixed to a trap. That section adds a penalty provision that is a violation. The penalty provision is not the criminal penalty provision that's later in the bill. And so the first section and the first change is to add a tag requirement that traps have tags affixed to them. The second change is that we are more narrowly defining the areas near which people cannot place traps within 200 feet. The original version of the bill said campsite, recreational beach, roadside rest, scenic site, or other public facility or area established under 4121, Alaska Statute 4121. The new bill, or the new draft, qualifies all of those places, the campsite, recreational beach, roadside rest, scenic site, or other public facility or area, and a public trail to be one that is developed or maintained, or developed or improved by public funds. This is to limit those areas near which you can't trap to those that are developed or improved by the government. And then also we took out the reference to the statute. That statute created all state parks. And so as it was drafted, it restricted trapping within all state parks. So we want to narrow the areas that you can't trap near to places that are frequently peopled, places that the government has put money into maintaining, developing, or improving. And then also to leave free the areas that people, if it's on public land, and then people and trappers have gone through and made their own trails, or the government has never put any funding into these trails, that those areas are still free for trapping within 200 feet. I think that's a good summary of the changes that have occurred.
Thank you, Ms. Rowe. And I think in our packets there's also a handout that describes the changes. Mm-hmm. And so, Representative Tallarico, is your objection still maintained to adopting the committee substitute?
Madam Chair, I will remove my objection, but just clearly state on the record that we've done a committee substitute and we had never actually heard the original bill. Mm-hmm. But the explanation, I think, if the rest of the committee, and I'll leave that up to other committee members, but I will, we hadn't heard the original mm-hmm. bill, so I will remove my objection, though.
Thank you, Representative Tallarico, and I appreciate the comment. And we'll go into the presentation of the bill. And Representative Birch, do you want to ask the question now or hold that thought for just a moment, because it did get a little out of order having to describe the committee, the changes before.
Yeah, well, I kind of had a question as well. Is the distinction between a committee substitute and a sponsor's, because I'm not sure I'm buying into all this. So I guess when it says committee substitute, what does that mean?
The changes in the bill become the working document. It's not an endorsement on your part for the bill. Okay. So it would be the working document and the version of the bill under consideration. But, for example, if a motion was made to move this bill out of committee, you could still object to that motion or vote no on moving the bill out of committee.
Okay. That would be helpful, and I look forward to learning if this is a recurring problem in District 17 and Midtown University in East Anchorage. So I presume that will be covered during the discussion. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Thank you, Representative Birch. And Representative Rauscher.
Just for clarification, through the chair, for clarification, is there, do you need permission from the bill drafted, the original bill representative here, or to have a committee substitute? I don't know the process. I'm just asking.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. And in this case, the bill sponsor is Representative Josephson. So in this case, the version of the bill that Representative Josephson would like us to consider is the committee substitute. And I think in most circumstances it would happen that way, that it would only be with the support of the sponsor.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Josephson, thank you so much, and let's hear this the bill.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The first thing I'd like to do in the event I forget to do it is respond to Representative Birch's comment. I represent 17,000 people in the middle of Anchorage. It's absolutely a true statement. But as a member of this committee and a member of the legislature, I've been to Point Thompson, I've been to Coop Park, I've been to Fort Knox Mine, I've been all over the state. And I'm asked, in fact, I'm compelled to deal with issues from all over the state of Alaska. And this is no different. This issue is no different than that. So if I can begin, the first thing I would say about this bill is the following. A lot of people might believe that the sponsor of such a bill is somebody who is very active in the Humane Society or Friends of Pets or that sort of thing. In my case, that is untrue. That is not why this bill came before you. I haven't owned a dog since I was a teenager. And I'm not, I love dogs, but I'm not likely to own one anytime soon. This bill is brought for one compelling reason, maybe a couple others. I'm going to show you, this binder here is replete with articles written in The Frontiersman, Mat-Su Frontiersman, The Peninsula Clarion, The Dispatch News, The Daily News Miner, The Juno Empire, and most of the articles, and there are scores of them, have been written in the last 4 or 5 years. They're either op-eds or they're articles that concern the problem of animals other than the target species being caught in traps and potential concerns to human life and welfare as well. This bill has support of thousands of people. Now, how do I say that with real comfort? Take, for example, just the problem in the Mat-Su, where a petition signed by 3,500 people has been signed, again by 3,500 people, that would take, for example, two trails. I think one is called the Moraine Trail. I'm trying to remember the
Crevasse
other.
Moraine.
Crevasse Moraine, and there's a second trail, I think the Government Trail or Government Hill, Government Peak Trail, where because of population pressure in the Mat-Su, with a population of now over 100,000 people, there is an outcry, mind you, supported by three members broadly, of the Municipal Assembly there, the Borough Assembly, to try to deal with the shared interest of protecting domestic animals and children. And it goes beyond that. It goes to snow machiners. It goes to sled dog teams. They've been impacted as well, and their stories, I'd be happy to have all of these placed into the record. But the problem isn't going to go away. And it's not going to go away because no adequate compromise, other than arguably in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, has been conceived. And so, part of the impetus for me being here is this outcry. And part of it is my own understanding, because of my own experience testifying before the Board of Game, that there is no, and I want to say this as strongly as I can, anyone who wants to remedy this problem will fail, I can say this almost unequivocally, if they offer a proposal before the Board of Game. That will not work. It just won't work. Because the Board of Game is not a body that represents diverse interests of the Alaska people. It's a body that represents the consumptive interests of the outdoorsmen. And it's very good at that. But when you present something like, for example, here in Juneau, there has been a practice, and it's my understanding it's only in Southeast, it may just be Juneau, but I think it's Southeast, there was a practice to require the tagging of traps. The Board of Game said, yeah, we're getting rid of that, so that the entire state won't have this requirement. But you can go on and on down the line. And any time a proposal is offered for this sort of non-consumptive interest, you're going to hear testimony that perhaps 5% of the time that proposal might be met positively. Now, you might say, Representative Josephson, you just told us that there was no occasion when this would happen. What I'm telling you more specifically is that in the area of trapping, you will not find an avenue to remedy this. If anyone questions, well, isn't this the Board of Game's purview? It can be, but we write Title 16, and it can be our purview, too. So essentially what this bill does is, and by the way, I'm not, do I like my bill? Of course I like my bill. Do I think it can be made better? Yes, I think it can. And so I'm eager to learn what I can learn. But essentially what this bill does is it says, in a public trail, and we've defined that as best we can, and related sort of places like campsites, recreational beaches, scenic sites, you can't have a trap. Now, there are certain traps that could not spell the demise of a dog, for example. And so that might be a friendly amendment. You can make unfriendly amendments. But that might be the sort of amendment that would be consistent with the bill. But essentially, you can't have a bill that can end a dog's life. Sorry, you can't have a trap that can end a dog's life within 200 feet of a trail. Now, one of the things you'll hear is that most of the times that this occurs, there's a leash law that's violated. Well, it's much more nuanced and complicated than that. Often, there's not a leash law that's violated. Sometimes, for example, in the Mat-Su Borough, an electric collar meets the definition of a leash law. So it is, by definition, legally a leash, even though it's clearly not a leash. Also, there are pets that are used in training by law enforcement. They're used by hunters. And they're, in other ways, a working animal that are threatened. This is, if one were to read what I've read, this is not a sort of occasional problem. It is, you know, we have examples in the literature of single veterinary clinics in the Mat-Su who've had five such dogs come to them in a single winter. The list goes on and on. And so the bill basically says, have your traps, but work a little bit to move them off the trail. And again, to the extent that a leash law were written more tightly, it is not a defense to say that the death of the dog is due purely to the fact that someone violated a leash law. You know, I'm remembering when I was a law student, there was a famous case that was in all of the law school horn books, which are basically treatises. And it was on personal injury or torts. And in the case, someone had installed a spring-loaded gun in their home. And the theory was, if a burglar comes, so be it. They've invited this on themselves. Well, that was not acceptable. You couldn't say, hey, they made the mistake of burglarizing the home, which they did, and they must pay the ultimate price. It's an interesting retort to the argument about needing traps off trails, but I think it's not dispositive. And I also think, again, that what you see in the literature is that this issue is getting more and more intense. It's not softening. And that the folks who want to find some remedy have no avenue to do so. And in fact, in the Mat-Su Borough, neither side is happy. And you might say, well, that's the right compromise. Sometimes it is. But it's essentially breaking down because the language of what's proposed there is becoming so unsatisfactory to both sides. So the bill, and I appreciate you listening to my diatribe on this, but the bill basically says you've got to move these traps off public trails for 200 feet. You know, currently you can even have them near schools, and I intend to offer an amendment if we come to that stage that would include the campus of public schools. What would then happen is the public would, that is, the trapping community would continue to enjoy 99%+ of the opportunity that's available, and the public would enjoy better protection. So that's essentially what this bill is about, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, then I'll turn it over to my aide for a sectional analysis.
Representative Birch.
A question on identification tags. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. A question on were there or are there or was there ever a requirement that they put identification tags on traps? I think they have them when you if you're fishing. Like if you leave a pot for out crab pot, for instance, I think you have to have a float with a number on, if I remember right. I guess the question is, can Fish and Game impose that as a requirement on through a regulatory mechanism? Because it seems like a good idea. Through the chair.
Well, we have a Fish and Game official here who could comment on it. I think that it can. My understanding of the way it works is Fish and Game, within its statutory authority, can offer any regs or regulations it wishes to. And then the Board of Game, of course, has that sort of similar authority as well. But the Board of Game has currently stripped away that requirement. And one of the things you see again in the literature is this belief that I think is, I'm not going to say it's a hyperbole in every instance, because that would be unfair. But it's this belief that, for example, those who are walking dogs will deliberately move a trap within a 200-foot zone so that someone's sanctioned. That strikes me as sort of unlikely and very wrong-headed, but that's one thing I've read. Or that somehow the person who felt wronged because their dog or child was threatened would find the code, call Fish and Game, and sort of harass someone. That's a lot of steps to take to go out of one's way. Could it happen? I suppose. But one would think that if the defense is, I'm outside the 200-foot limit, then that's a good defense. I don't know if that helps.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Representative Westlake.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and through the Chair. Thanks for bringing this up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is I know of at least another representative here who's like me, dogs are part of our family. But as I'm listening to this and everything that's going on, like Matsu, over 100,000 people in there, strong boroughs out there. Me, I represent a district that's over 350,000 miles. Now, for me, something like this, wouldn't we better be suited for ordinances like this at a borough or municipal level rather than the state trying to do something that has implications in my house district, the most prime for out there, that's marketable? So I have to wonder, as we're sitting here and we're discussing House Bill 91, less jail time, less cost to the state, if maybe the purview for something like this should be at a local borough or municipal level?
Well, through the chair, it's a good question. I would say that the bill, and again, there would be ways I think that the language could probably be improved that might satisfy both interests. And I'll tell you that the sad story is that with the exception of possibly the Fairbanks North Star Borough, where it's required that you mark your trap, that was one of the solutions. And I think they've also worked hard to follow the Fish and Game guidelines, which are violated all the time, which say be sensitive to other recreational users. But I think that the answer in part, Vice Chairman Westlake, is that the trail would have to be developed and improved by government in some way. And so I think that would dispense with most of those concerns. But I guess, you know, part of it is, for reasons I don't understand, the boroughs are not responsive to this massive outcry that's written about constantly. Last month there were two or three major op-eds. The Frontiersman writes about this pretty frequently. The Clarion has written about it. And as I said, the Board of Game is just, I mean, I don't want to be disrespectful to the seven of them, but it is just a fruitless exercise. They are not going to seriously consider any non-consumptive concern. And you could bring them photos of your dog having met its death, and it just isn't going to be impactful. They're going to side with the trapping interests every time. And I think the trapping interests, by the way, I think they believe this is part of a slippery slope. Look, I'm born and raised here. I've lived twice in rural Alaska. I used to snow machine to work every day. I had a beard that I couldn't even describe if I wanted to. I've ice fished. I've done it all, okay? I didn't do any trapping, but I probably ate something that someone trapped. But I think that you know, I understand that the state was sort of built on this, on trapping, that was sort of its part, and it's part of our heritage and our culture, and I think it's great. But my goodness, I mean, you know, these good people need a remedy, and they are not getting one. And I wanted to see if I can help them.
Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wonder if the sponsor, I think a good point was brought up, and if the sponsor maybe could, I don't know what the intentions are with this bill today, but if we could maybe get a breakdown of Title 29 and those home rule first-class and second-class municipal governments, and just to make sure that we understand what their abilities might be to actually be able to set their own restrictions within their, because there's a full-blown list, is the best way I could put it, of what those people have the ability to do and what they don't have the ability to do. So I think that would be an important piece of information for us.
Through the chair, let me respond to that. I have and was just given two legal memoranda on that topic because Mr. Spirapolis, the borough attorney in the Mat-Su borough, believes that the borough has no authority to issue this sort of regulation. And that's another reason why I'm here. So now, Anchorage clearly has rules, and so I can find the answer to that. We can see whether or not municipalities are different than boroughs, and we can do that analysis. You bet.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you for bringing this forward. Obviously, you're talking about Mat-Su, and much of what you're talking about here is right in my district, so I certainly have heard of this problem before. I understand now that the Mat-Su borough did have this before them and it did not pass. My concern is that we're seeking a statewide solution to a local problem, and I hope that we can sort this out as we go through this discussion, because obviously as you have populated areas butting up against the wilderness areas, I mean, there's just the kind of conflicts that you end up with, and I don't necessarily have a great answer to it. I do come from a family that did a little trapping, and I know they would. I can hear in my head a few voices talking about identification of traps. I mean, that's to me a separate issue almost. It's mm-hmm. there as part of this, but it's a little bit of a separate issue because I think there's different pieces that kind of go along with that. But I would say that we're a little bit. If we're going to track these, we're going to put a identification. This is over on the identification of traps. I think that's probably going to be a bit of a fiscal note on that piece, maybe not on putting the regulation in place. But I don't know how you can hardly implement a system for identifying all the traps in Alaska as far as getting your tags on them. Or maybe it is just a painted number. I don't know what you're envisioning. But it seems to me like that's setting up a registry that we would have to think a little more about. So I don't know if I can ask for a fiscal note or if anything additional there. I can do some research. But on the other piece, I mean, I'm still going to be looking at this, and Mat-Su, it's definitely a problem. But I don't know if it's something that we should try to do something that applies just to Mat-Su that might apply differently in a different area of the state. So I'm still kind of digging around in my head trying to figure out where how this would apply. Mm-hmm. Certainly know people whose dogs have been caught in traps, and it is certainly an issue in the Mat-Su area.
Through the chair, I appreciate your comments. I understand that there may need to be, and there may be a way for this committee to fashion it, and I think I'm going to have a conversation with one member of the committee about ways to do that, but there may be a way to sort of satisfy different types of areas. I mean, I would note this is a unique kind of bill, but I would note that we pass laws all the time that apply statewide. That's what we do. And one other thing you mentioned that I'm trying to recall, the fiscal note. This bill actually requires that the tags be self-funded. So consistent with House Bill 137 from last year, which was a revenue raiser because there had been no increase in tags and fees and permits in decades, at least for most categories. This would require a small nominal fee, so the department, as I understand it, would actually have the resources to create the tag, I guess.
Thank you. Sorry, I didn't use the proper protocol, but Madam Chair, thank you.
No problem. Any other questions for the bill sponsor? And if not, we'll turn the gavel back over. Oh, one more question from Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. And Representative Josephson, in Section 2, there under Item 1, the 200 feet has a developer-improved campsite. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how deep our definition goes. I know that even some registered guides actually have Department of Natural Resource permits. Well beyond the road system and everything, where they actually, I think that could be considered where they repeatedly go year after year as a developed campsite, and it seems a little awkward, in particularly because of their location, mm-hmm. that potentially would be covered under this. And then further on, maybe better definition, a scenic site, mm-hmm. Would have a. And I guess I'm a biased Alaskan.
Mm-hmm. Every site is.
I couldn't list how many scenic sites I have been to in the state of Alaska, yeah. And they may not be off the sides of trails or anything, but that's such a broad And I mean, you know, you and I smile about it a little bit, but yeah. I think scenic site is in the eye of the beholder. So I just want to let you know that particularly is a struggle for me.
I understand.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Through the Chair, just briefly, I think that there's a definition in the law for scenic site. And relative to the sort of the off-system campsites of a guide, you know, the emphasis here is on developed and improved public facilities. And, again, we have a situation where any number of us might go to the Russian Creek campsite for a weekend, or I'm trying to think what it is called, Copper Creek, or near Cooper Landing. These are just places anyone might go to spend time with family, and there's nothing prohibiting right there off your camp, you know, tent site 31, for a trap to be there, and they are there. So,
Representative Tallarico, a follow-up, or
just one, and I appreciate that. Although I think the commas in that structured sentence actually separate these as individual, identify them as individual things. So just
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Thank you,
Representative Rauscher.
Through the chair, what's the intent of the chair and this committee with this bill today?
thank you, Representative Rauscher. So there are individuals who have been invited testimony to follow the bill sponsor, and then I believe some public testimony will be taken, but don't anticipate getting through that. So I think we will plan to hold this bill today, and there'll be additional time for questions as well as, you know, work through any of the issues with the bill sponsor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it.
Representative Parrish, and then Representative Birch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Of the articles, and I saw the stack and blanched. Mm-hmm. What proportion of the incidents were caused by leg hold traps, and what proportion by other kinds?
Well, sometimes the term, I think, foothold is used, leg hold, conibear, snare. They are not a trap, sort of a box trap to keep the animal alive. I think the simple answer is the majority, but I mean some of them are crushing devices designed to sort of dispatch the animal immediately, and sometimes that's the dog, that's your dog, not your dog, but it's a dog near the public trail.
Follow up, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Have any Do any of the articles concern noose type traps?
No. Although, no. No, they do not concern noose type traps.
Thank you.
Representative Birch?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I guess the concern, and we'll get to it through with testimony, but you know, we hear often about the urban-rural divide, and I'm really concerned when those of us that live in downtown Anchorage, are looking at basically changing the way that people have trapped and lived and existed for a long time in rural Alaska, and I'm certainly akin to that and aware of that, but I recognize what's going on here, but I'm concerned that maybe what we can do or what we need to do is work with within the fishing game, within kind of the regular structure. We need to get traps identified and so forth, but I do look forward to listening to additional testimony trying to, because it's certainly not a concern in South Anchorage, I would say, that I'm aware of or has ever been brought up, but I am concerned about the spillover that this would have in rural parts of our state where people actually rely on this as a means of taking care of their families, mm-hmm. and supporting their those that are near and dear to them. So
just through the chair, first of all, I South Anchorage better than I do, but I know that it really is a concern in South Anchorage because it abuts the Chugach State Park, and this issue has surfaced in the Chugach State Park, which is in your backyard. I share your concern with truly rural parts of the state, and of course we'd have debate about what that means because of subsistence definitions of what's been found to be rural, that sort of thing. But I think that to hide from this problem, and in those parts of our state like the Matsu and the Kenai that are both urban and rural and that have sort of confronted this, and by the way, there's an op-ed here from Cordova about the problems in Cordova, and so it's sort of all over, but I think that we can help some people. And by the way, there is some indication, both in the literature where trappers, now they've taken a sort of, in my view, a little bit harder line as the Board of Game has gotten more hard-lined itself. But say, 10 years ago, they looked at this, and I think they still probably do, as a real sort of blemish on good ethical trapping, and were very... some of them very disappointed when bad actors were causing this to happen. We think that, by the way, there's a group in Delta Junction that we're getting lots of phone calls from that is a trapping group that is very supportive of what we're doing. They may want to make some adjustments, and we're going to hear them. But anyway...
Yeah. Well, thank you. By way of follow up, I agree with you. I think that we need to keep our ears open and be listening to those concerns that may be popping up. But I think it's pretty tough to legislate out bad practices. I mean, I see streets or road signs shot up right and left by good, decent hunters. I assume they're hunters. Somebody's packing a weapon. So, I mean, we see there's no shortage of poor practice, but I do look forward to hearing, from the trapping community as to how this works. Thank you, ma'am.
We have a question from Representative Westlake and then Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the Chair, again, Representative Josephson, thank you for bringing this up. It really is a thorny issue. For people like me out there, I mean, subsistence trapping is the way of life, as well as other people. I mean, I come from prime trapping places out there. So I'm glad you bring this up, but it also kind of, when we start talking about this, is there going to be an added burden as we go to get our trapping license and things like that. So, and you'd mentioned something, the Board of Game over there. I'm hoping we hear from them because, as I understand it, they've been tackling this issue for 10 years or so. And I'm looking forward to hearing all sides of this, so thank you.
Thank you. And they have been tackling it for 10 years, and they've never sided with a non-consumptive user in that period of time on this issue, to my knowledge.
Representative Johnson.
So I have ran trap line when I was younger, and I know I was there when trapping was taught in our family, and there is no way. I mean, I agree with you. This kind of goes against, I mean, every time I hear about a trap being set so close to a trail, it goes against everything I was ever taught about, trapping and things like that. But I think the challenge is to separate out to fix the problem without causing harm to, you know, to some, to a way of life that people have. And I guess the identification tag seems, I mean, I'm thinking about our traps. I mean, I have to say there was a pile of different traps. I can't even imagine trying to tag them all. And one breaks and you throw it in the pile, or you might take it apart and put some pieces back together. And so, I mean, that's just a comment on that. But the one that I'm really interested in is the local control and what the Matsu, I mean, just because there's a lot of discussion about Matsu Borough, and I think that is Matsu Borough, and probably the Denali Borough also has this, you know, you butt up between the urban-rural piece starts, you know, people start to encroach on things. So I'd really like to hear, have the committee know what the Matsu Borough did. And I thought they took it up and actually did not pass this ordinance. And so I'd like to know more about that. I'd like to know what the powers that local government have. You know, because I know this is a problem in Matsu, and I appreciate you bringing it up because it's a thorny issue that we have to deal with. I just don't think it's, I don't know. I don't know that it's a one-size-fits-all for a whole state, and that's my another concern that I have.
No question, Representative Johnson, but just...
Oh, a statement? I'm sorry. My question would be, are we going to get the... if we can find out what Matsu Borough, what action did they take and why, and going back to the powers that the borough, the different boroughs have throughout the state as far as local control, and really hearing from Fish and Game on what local control means as far as game management practices. So I guess that's a more of a request for information.
I think something, Representative Josephson, through the chair, speaking. I think that so there will be some invited testimony that has real expertise about the posture of this, that is, its status in the Matsu right now.
Thank you.
Representative Rauscher.
I think, well, thank you, through the chair. My part of my question was actually was asked in the end by the representative from Palmer. I guess my question here is, have a lot of the actual groups that trap sportsmen and everything offered suggestions toward this bill, or how was it, you know, in other words, have we gone to them and are we looking to them for the ultimate solution here, I guess is what my question is. And if not, can we? And if you already have gone through that measure, I was just wondering how much involved they are in maybe coming up with the ultimate idea here.
Well, through the chair, I mean, I've gotten some emails from them. They've expressed something that my aide Megan Rowe noted, which is that if they, for example, went 201 feet off the trail, would they, in effect, if they make that trip every 3 or 4 days as required, for example, in a federal refuge, you must inspect every 3 or 4 days, would they be forming a trail in the snowpack and therefore now they're within 200 feet of what they formed? No, because that is not a state-maintained or a locally, publicly maintained trail. That's the answer to that. But one of the things they've done, for example, in the Kenai, is they have tried to resolve this by making sure that the bad actors stop acting badly, and through signage. But my understanding, and again, I didn't attend this specific Board of Game meeting, but that compromise was contingent on any proposal that was offered through the Board of Game, because as you know, you can make a citizen proposal. So a citizen can basically say, I want to make a law, and they can do that. It's sort of a neat Alaska thing that we do. But they wanted, in order, now this is the view, mind you, I'm sure they have their own position, but the non-consumptive community in the Kenai Peninsula would say, before they would seriously negotiate with me on some sort of settlement, they wanted proposals withdrawn. And the concern of the user group, in this case, the dog owner user group, and I know those can overlap because you could have naturally trappers that are dog owners, but the concern is that they need an actual law that they can cite to, because the problem is so ubiquitous. And it is a shocking thing to read what I've read.
Follow-up, Representative Rauscher.
And just a quick follow-up. I don't mean whether there's a substitute for a law. I just meant if there was a consensus on how to write it and what the ultimate answer for writing the law is amongst all the user groups, I guess is where I was going. I apologize for not making that clearer.
No, and I through the chair, I take your point, and I invite that sort of communication. I'm not trying to win my bill. I'm trying to win a resolution.
Thank you very much.
Vice Chair Wesley.
Well, and through the chair, thank you, ma'am. I really do applaud you on this. It's something that, like Representative Johnson said, it just isn't done by those of us that do this responsibly. One of the considerations as we're talking about local control is, has there been any consideration rather than us trying to do this as a statewide general fix, just shotgunning the state, has there been any discussions with Fish and Game about game managed units specifically on municipalities where it is still done at the state level, but through local management if the boroughs can't do it? I can see some of the issues with boroughs where money is tight for them as well, but maybe as game management units being able to petition from that venue?
Well, through the chair, I mean, I you know, Fish and Game, I think, from my reading of the developing story 10 or 15 years ago, was just like the Board of Game has moved. I think they were more sort of sympathetic to the non-consumptive side 10 or 15 years ago. They had a member, for example, a Board of Game member named Meyer, M-A-I-E-R, who was very, very sympathetic. She's 2002, mind you. But she was very sympathetic to it. And I just, you don't hear that. You hear it from occasionally in the commentary from members, but they ultimately don't side that way. These are sort of, my sense is these are sort of 6-0, 6-1, 7-0 decisions of the Board of Game against proposals. Okay.
Okay. Representative Johnson, one more question.
Madam Chair, through the chair, thank you very much. I just have one thing I'd like you to bring back on this, just one more for information, because it's starting to stir up some things that happened from you know, reminding me about trapping. So one of the things that does happen when you have a trap line is people steal your traps, people steal your traps, people steal your animal, you know, your game that you caught. So in the bill, and maybe in consideration, I guess I'd like to hear from Fish and Game, if you have them here, about what you would do if you do have identification, how they would implement the process of identification, and what do you do if there's a stolen, I mean, because it's really hard to, you know, okay, here's a trap, here's an animal, here's somebody's name on it. You know, that's the idea, I think, behind identification. But then people steal traps. Then you end up with people that have, I'm sure, two or three people's names on their different traps. Anyway, it's just I'd like to find out if they have some information on how some of these kinds of things have been implemented.
Okay. And through the chair, I mean, this would not be a name identifier; it would be a code of
the
some
code,
sort.
Yeah.
But you're saying that a trap thief could, who might or might not be another trapper, could put the trap perhaps in an illegal place, then the mm-hmm. innocent party is charged. I think that's the sort of thing mm-hmm. you're concerned. Mm-hmm. We can certainly give that some consideration and talk to the
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, seeing no questions from the committee, then we will transition into the invited testimony, and I believe Mr. Ken Green, who is online from the Kenai Peninsula, is the first individual slated to testify, and I'm going to hand the gavel back over to Representative Josephson. And Mr. Green, I hope, is online. And if you want to go ahead and state your name and put yourself on the record, and please provide us with your testimony. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, we have somebody in person here to testify also.
Yes.
Okay.
That person is going.
Yes, I think her name is Miss O'Brien. And if she is okay, we'll hear from the telephonic testimony first.
Okay. Hello, this is Ken Green. I'm in Cooper Landing on the Kenai Peninsula. To do a testimony, do you want me to answer questions on specific topics or just say anything?
Well, Mr. Green, Andy Josephson here. Are you testifying from Cooper Landing?
Yes, I am. Yes. All right. I'm on the phone. Yeah.
All right. Why don't you put your name on the record? So tell us if you're Ken Green.
I
All right. And tell us how it comes to be that you have an interest in House Bill 40.
I got involved with the tracking issue a number of years ago because our dogs were caught in traps nearby in town on the beach where people walk their dogs or just let their kids run around free and stuff like that. And I was invited by Representative Robertson, and thank you for the opportunity of saying something. It's a very complicated issue, and it's going to take a lot of detailed work to get moving on it. And I personally think that the Alaska Trappers Association and the Board of Game have basically brought legislation or the consideration for legislating on this matter upon themselves, because they're so very adroit at sidestepping the issue and putting it off for endless years and not dealing with it. I presented a number of propositions to the board, proposals, and our proposal from Cooper Landing was basically one that was submitted to the Board of Game. And in my discussions with local trapping interests, who are obviously directed by the Alaska Trappers Association in Fairbanks, my intention was to try and narrow down our proposals to maybe something that could be acceptable for everybody. However, the Alaska local trapper, after two meetings, he came in the second meeting and basically said, "Why are we here?" And I explained, you know, that I brought maps and I wanted to show and work with detailed areas on what could be possibly mutually agreeable. And he just came up with the, "If you don't withdraw your proposals, we have nothing to talk about," and he walked out on it. And that's the extent of the cooperation that people get when they try and discuss these matters with the Trappers Association. They just stonewall it right from the beginning, which is kind of discouraging, and it's also worrying because it doesn't just happen once. To me, it's already happened basically three times, where we had a big meeting in Cooper Landing, and the Board of Game president showed up, and everyone was very magnanimous about wanting to cooperate. But when it comes down to the actual sitting down to do anything, they walk away from it. And this includes any kind of discussion about, well, maybe, you know, smaller traps would be acceptable around town, you know, off the road, as long as they're not killer conibear traps, you know, maybe we could live with that. But they won't sit down and discuss anything. And the problem is if you make a proposal and you take it to the Board of Game, they can find anything about your proposal that they don't like, and they can reject it. And you give your testimony, and then they give their responses, but there's no ability for the person who put in their proposal to be able to discuss the matter in any way or form. You can't compromise in the way the process is working. So I submitted another proposal I was trying to hope that the Board of Game or someone could require that the Alaska Trappers Association would sit down and talk to somebody, you know, to a local group, without being able to legally walk away. And that was turned down because, of course, they said, you know, they can't tell a private group what to do. So I can accept that. But until they decide that it's in their own interest to sit down and try and solve these problems, the problems are going to continue. And I think the only way that it can be approached is by what you're doing now with your Bill number 40, which is requiring legislation. And once there's a legislation there, if they don't like the, for instance, the setback rules, if they're too far in certain places like that, then I think they would come to the table and bargain about, well, if this is asking too much, then, you know, maybe we shouldn't ask for that much in that spot. But until they come to the table, there's absolutely no way that anyone can do anything. And as far as I can see, there are more and more people having more problems because of the younger people moving in, like to Cooper Landing, for instance. And also, I think it would lead to the problem that people might become less worried about just going out and taking traps or moving them or throwing them in the woods. Because, like, the Board of Game will say that if you make regulations, it's going to be impossible to enforce them because it'll be too much strain of enforcement on the enforcement people, on the Fish and Game and the Board and the wildlife troopers. A lot of it has to be done, of course, by your own personal whatever standards or honesty. But I kind of lost my track.
Well, Mr. Green, we're going to
become less worried about breaking that rule regulation. Okay. It's also as unenforceable for people as it is to enforce the regulation. So it's a two-way street there.
Okay.
But I think the main idea is that somehow the two opposing sides in the towns and the communities, whatever, have to be brought together to figure out some kind of issue.
All right. I just have one additional question, then we'll take any questions from the panel. The first question is very discreet and sort of narrow, and that is, what you said something about being in a beach and your dogs were trapped, but can you tell, so part one of my question is, what exactly happened to you relative to this subject? And the second thing is, what is it that you proposed precisely to the Board of Game? So two parts. What happened to you? What did you propose?
The first time I went out, I had no clue. When we had puppies, small puppies, and so I didn't have much clue about trapping. And so one of our little puppies got caught on this place that's called Five Mile Beach or Waikiki Beach, which is a popular beach in Cooper Landing down the road on Kenai Lake. And the dog got caught in a fairly mid-sized leg hole trap. It wasn't a conibear trap or anything. And I could tell by the squealing and the whining down the beach that, I know what that was. I knew what it was, but I hadn't given it any thought. So I went down and I took her out. And this was before I knew anything about trapping, so I didn't know any regulations or anything. So I took the trap. I just took it. I let the dog out and I kept the trap. Another incident was a snare over on another beach, which is also close to town. And then another was another lake called trap, which was up on a power line, which I could accept as a place for trapping. And once again, I forgot about the dogs. So what was the question again?
What is it that you proposed that apparently was rejected? You went to the Board of Game, you said, I want you to do
X. Right. I went to the Board of the Game, first in Kenai, and this is when intensive management was being discussed with the bears. And so their main topic was bears, and Mr. Spraker, who was president, let me have my say, and I asked him, well, what should we do about trapping in Cooper Landing? And he said, go back to Cooper Landing and form a committee of interested people, because there had been dogs killed here and maimed. So that's what we did.
Okay.
I came back, I started forming a committee, and then more and more people got interested, and now it's moved on to something that's called Footloose Alaskans, which is on the internet, and it's dealing a lot with the wolf problem up in Denali Park and things like that.
All right, I'm just trying to clarify. You wrote a proposal for the board of game, and it asked for what? Did you say?
Let's see. I think basically we asked for 250-foot setbacks.
Where?
On trails. And this is where the problem comes. And this illustrates how difficult it will be to deal with the problem unless you get some kind of panel where you can discuss, is this too much or is this too little? So what we did, since there are a lot of trails, and this wasn't just my doing, this was the other people on the committee, and I basically knew that we were going to be asking too much. I was going to be asking too much because I had to go and present the darn thing to the Board of Game in Anchorage. But we asked for trails like the Juneau Trail, the Juneau Falls Trail, the Russian River area, up Snug Harbor, Lost Lake Trail, Quartz Creek Campground, up along Bean Creek Road, up along Snug Harbor Road, the boat launch at the down there at Quartz Creek, and the boat launch at Russian River, and at Kenai Bridge. So it's a pretty big area, and I had no other thoughts than the Board of Game was going to reject it. And this is what we were trying to deal with in some kind of discussion beforehand, so that we could submit a proposal that would address, the trapping problem and the pet conflicts and other users' conflicts without having it written in stone. And it's something that you could bargain over, or not bargain over, but just discuss and come up with some kind of some kind of plan that if we're asking too much out on Snug Harbor Road, maybe we could go out at certain miles mileage and say this is a no trapping area. The response we got from Fairbanks, because they were worried about what's going on in Cooper Landing, they don't want to see trapping rights threatened by anybody. So they came up with putting signs up along Snug Harbor Road and different places like Quartz Creek boat launch and campground. But the problem with the signs, you can appreciate that. Excuse me, but the signs are actually only recommendations. They say trapping is not recommended here.
Okay.
And I've even talked to a trapper who says, those can actually be a magnet for people who say, oh, trapping isn't recommended here, but you're still allowed to do it. And that's where the problem with the signage has come in.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Green. I think I'm going to ask the panel if they've got any questions for you, and then I want to hear from another invited
testifier.
Do you have a question?
I do.
No,
hold on, Ken.
Sure.
Representative Chairman, I just had a question. We have had some discussion here about local control. Have you had an opportunity to approach the borough in the area, or the local government in the area, regarding identifying areas to be off?
I went down and gave a presentation to one of the borough meetings in Soldotna a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I guess. But I discovered that they were, I mean, a lot of the people on the council were actually unaware that there was even a trapping problem, and that's fair. And there was also another member on board who was very adamant at my wording. I presented a petition that I put online that said basically that Alaska trapping is unregulated, which was kind of not true. So I agreed with him there, but I changed the wording to underregulated, in my opinion, in certain areas. So I did approach them, and basically I think they said there's nothing they can do because I'm not sure what the reason was on that one.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Green. Any other questions? All right. Then we're going to move on. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Green. We're going to move on to the second invited person, and she is Lynn Mitchell. Are you there on the phone?
But you'll need to hold on 1 second. I'm at my office, and I have my cat on my paperwork. Hold on. Are you there?
Just a reminder, we have a person in the room here.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, Ms. Mitchell.
Yes, I'm at my office. I had a distraction in here.
All right. So you have the House Resources Committee before you. The subject is House Bill 40. Are you familiar with House Bill 40?
Yes.
All right. What is your interest in the subject of... Yes, can you put yourself on the record, please? Just tell us who you are.
By stating my name is Lynn Mitchell.
All right. And what is your interest in this bill?
Well, I formed a group a few years ago called Alaska Safe Trails, and we are advocating for changes with regard to trapping in highly populated areas and along high-use recreational trails. So that would be my interest.
Okay. And what is your, you live in the Matsu Valley?
I do.
All right. And how long have you been working on this issue?
For probably almost 4 years now.
All right. Tell us, because we have a committee member, and I'm curious myself, has the Matsu Borough made a decision, that is, has the Matsu Borough Assembly made a decision about whether to regulate traps near trails?
Not at this time. We presented a stack of petitions to them approximately a year ago with respect to two trails, popular trails in this Matsu Borough and school property. And at this time, no presentation has been made to the Assembly.
How many members of the Assembly are there?
There are seven.
All right. And how many of those members have expressed general, and I'm underlining these two words, general sympathy with your position?
I would say three.
Okay. And what is it that you're... Why don't you tell the committee what your specific concern is? What have you experienced, or what have you...
Well, I would like to say that this is an issue that needs to be solved legislatively on the state level. It's common sense, and it's long overdue. Every year, you will read in the ADN a new story, and all you need to do is substitute names, different victims each year, but the wording is the same. So it goes on and on and on, where local trails, high-use recreational trails, are being used as trap lines against fish and game guidelines. And that's all they are guidelines. And so every year, pets are being trapped. In fact, it's such a problem here in the Mat-Su borough, and this comes as a total surprise to the people who it impacts. They have no idea until it happens to them, and then they find out that they are the guilty party, they are the criminal. And even in the Mat-Su borough animal shelter night drop, there are two cages in that night drop for animals who are found in traps. So that's how much of a problem it is that they even had to set aside two cages for animals that are found in traps. As the population increases out here and we are being advertising ourselves as a recreation destination, and that's not just hunting and fishing and trapping. That is skiing, hiking, biking, and so trail use goes up. And as trail use goes up, these encounters are more and more frequent. Trappers, the unethical trappers, which is why laws are made to deal with the lowest common denominator, they're trapping lazy. They're, and although the trappers will tell you it's just a few, the few seem to be many because these incidents are happening all over this borough and all over other areas in the state, as you just heard from Ken, in very dense areas along trails that were not designed for trapping. They were put in for the recreational uses that I just mentioned. And often these are family outings and kids are witness to these events. I just spoke to a woman 2 weeks ago in Homer whose two sons watched their dog get trapped and mom almost stepped in a trap and the dog was right next to her. And so she said her boys are being raised to hunt and fish and experience the great outdoors, but they will never ever be advocates for trapping. In fact, every time an incident occurs, I gain more allies and more people are becoming angry and frustrated that 0.4% of the state's population, which are the trappers, according to Fish and Game, 2,500 to 3,500 trappers, and you can do the math, 0.4% of the population is controlling 99.6% of the use of public land in the wintertime. The Fish and Game brochure, Trap Safety for Pet Owners, it advises you to leave the area when you discover a trap line. And people are doing just that. They don't ever want to experience it again. They don't want Fido to struggle and be maimed in a leg hold or die in a snare or a conibear. I have story upon story up on our website of dogs who've been maimed and dogs who have died. And so it's a tragedy for the entire family when this happens. And I'd like to go on here. I have some more comments. No other trail user impacts another trail user like trappers do. And to illustrate that point, if I go on a hike, I don't have to pack a flat tire kit for someone else's bike, or I don't have to pack a ski pole if somebody skis by me and breaks their pole. But I do have to pack, and this is straight out of this brochure, Trap Safety for Pet Owners, I have to pack rope, wire, zip ties, a muzzle, trap setters, and a short board in order to try to save my pet or even myself from a trap.
Well, and if I could interrupt you, the committee, and I'd be happy to produce this for you, the Department of Fish and Game, which is a great department, has essentially recommended this very thing. They have classes on how to get your pet out of traps, and they recommend that you bring these instruments with you.
With you on your day hike,
yes,
or ski or bike. And again, to reiterate the point, it's something that a trapper doesn't have to pack anything to deal with my activity out on the trail, or a biker's activity, or a skier's activity, but yet we have to run around with these packs of tools. I don't know if anyone there has seen a trap-setting tool. Maybe Ms. Johnson has, since she has experienced trapping, but that's like carrying around bolt cutters. And physically, most people are never going to be able to save their dog in a conibear trap. That's a death trap, and snares can be a death trap as well, because it happens quickly. And when an animal is struggling, we have an incident of a man who had to resuscitate his dog in front of his children as they were screaming and crying, because the dog was snared. And this was right near his home. So it's out of control because of the lowest common denominator in this group of individuals. And I want to address the trapper's most widely used, what they hide behind, and that is the leash law. And I'm just going to take that on head on. That is no defense. First of all, there is no statewide leash law. State parks require dogs to be leashed in certain areas, campgrounds, parking lots, picnic areas, wherever there's, you know, a communal area. But once you're out on the trail system, voice control. Here in the Mat-Su Borough, what qualifies as a leash is an electronic shock collar. My dogs are on electronic collars, and they will stop on a dime when I beep them. So they can be under my control, perfectly legal, be coming to me, and be caught in a trap and or killed in a trap. And this has happened. Search and rescue dogs are exceptions to the leash law. Sled dogs are exceptions to the leash law. Hunting dogs are exceptions to the leash law. All of those dogs have been trapped in the Mat-Su Borough. Search and rescue dogs have been trapped in the Mat-Su Borough while training at the Menard Center, which is a sports center just out right in, I don't even know if it isn't in Wasilla city limits, it's right outside.
Ms. Mitchell, we have a question from Representative Johnson.
Uh-huh.
Is this a Ms. Mitchell that's across the street from my family?
Yeah, your house looks fine.
Oh, good. All right, great. Well, that's good to hear. Hey, I have a question, and it may not go to exactly your expertise on this, but I think you might have more of a sense of it for the Mat-Su or Palmer area anyway. Is I was trying to think about the kind of the financial implications, you know, so you have trapping and it's someone's livelihood or whatever, or so on. But I'm trying to think particularly in the Mat-Su Valley around the populated trails. I mean, what are those traps trapping for? Is there, I mean, snares might be rabbits, I suppose, but there's, are they doing, I'm trying to think, is anyone really making a living trapping by the trails in the valley, or is it just hobby trapping?
Well, I totally agree with you. In fact, the Code of Ethics for Trappers says concentrate trapping in areas where animals are overabundant for the supporting habitat. I don't see how on an urban trail system surrounded by subdivisions that anyone can maintain that the animals are overabundant for the habitat. Years ago, when I was in Crevasse Moraine Trail System hiking, I would occasionally see a fox or a coyote. And, much to my chagrin, occasionally a porcupine. But now you see nothing. There's nothing there. These are clearly, reckless hobby trappers. And I'm going to make a side comment. My profession is I'm a CPA. And clearly when I started my entity, Alaska Safe Trails, and started this campaign, I I didn't realize I had clients who were trappers, and obviously due to ethics, none shall be named, but I will tell you I lost every single one of those clients, and I will tell you the reason I didn't know they were trappers is because not a single one of them was reporting any income. So there's another issue I would say, is that how much of this trapping is, I can understand in the rural parts of the state where trapping is probably still done for subsistence purposes, but I would hazard a guess that hardly any trapping is being done for subsistence purposes in these urban areas. And the Board of Game has served as a protectorate for trappers. Every single trapping proposal that has come before them in the last 19 years, I did a study, and I think you'll be hearing about my study later in the week, that there have been 88 proposals sent to the Board of Game in the last 19 years, and not a one of them has passed. So the Board of Game is the firewall, and the Board of Game should be ashamed of themselves. These were reasonable proposals asking for just what is being mentioned in HB 40, setbacks on trails and along trails. And I might add that, honestly, how can anyone call themselves an outdoorsman if you can't walk two-thirds of a football field? Have we gotten to the point where trapping is all mechanized, where nobody really traps like Davy Crockett did? If you can't walk 200 feet off a trail, there's something wrong with you. You're not really a trapper. And
Ms. Mitchell, I'm going to take one more question. We've got it. Someone that's been invited that's in the room, and then we're going to hold public testimony. And I want to say that there's a gentleman from the Alaska Frontier Trapper Association, and I'm going to commit to him that when we take this up for public testimony, if I'm allowed to do this, that you, Jonathan, can go first if you're on the line. But it'll be a different date, I'm afraid. Mr. Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually have a license to trap. It's a part of my hunting and fishing, and I get trapping on there. And I haven't used it, but I'm interested in keeping that as a way of living and an option. And I guess one of the concerns I have, as particularly if you're looking at the numbers of the 2,500 to 3,500, one of the concerns I have is that a lot of this initiative may be directed towards eliminating trapping, as opposed to just tuning it up around the edges. And I'm certainly sympathetic, but I think that one of the comments that was made was related to highly populated areas, and I think highly populated areas generally have some form of local governance, and that form of local governance is generally from my experience is generally attuned to issues that are of high sensitivity in the local community. So I would just encourage Ms. Mitchell to continue working with the local government there in that effort, irrespective of what we're able to accomplish here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bridge. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. And Ms. Mitchell, I just had a question. I apologize if I missed this in the testimony. I've helped friends check their traps, but this was on federal public lands. And what is the requirement on federal public lands, if you're aware of it, and if you think that's a model that's working, relative to what we're considering today?
Actually, I am unaware of what the federal public land requires. I don't have any knowledge of, I just only am aware of what state, that the state has no such requirements for trap, checking your traps or IDing your traps or trap placement. And I believe there's an ongoing issue regarding federal wildlife refuges, and I think some rules that the federal government has placed in those areas that the state is challenging. So that I'm somewhat familiar with, but I wouldn't know whether federal public land has laws that supersede the state in this area. Or I misunderstood your question or something.
No, thank you, Ms. Mitchell. I just thought you might, having lots more experience with this issue than I do, be familiar with how what their policies are, and so that was the reason for the question. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Mr. Rauscher. Representative
Thank you. Through the chair, is this the Lynn Mitchell that used to do my taxes?
Yes.
Because I am a because I am a taxpayer. just for clarification's sake, between I don't know if you were here earlier to Representative Josephson's testimony and yours, both of you have talked about the Mat-Su Borough Assembly. And I believe you stated that you've talked to your assembly members and seemed to be that three were somewhat interested in your cause. Is that correct?
That is correct. But what happens, if I may, is that the Alaska Trappers Association, based in Fairbanks, no matter where anyone tries to bring up these local issues, they intervene, whether or not they even know the trails that are being targeted. Mm-hmm. And I have a clear, Randy Zarnke is the president of the ATA based in Fairbanks. And second paragraph from the bottom, president's message, we continue to work with the leaders of the Mat-Su Borough in an attempt to stifle a few squeaky wheels who are trying to create trouble for trappers. And I think that says it all.
And through the chair, you had said that you had talked to Nick Spiropoulos and that you said that it was his comment that the Mat-Su Borough could not work on this. Is that correct?
Nearly. For the record, this is Chairman Josephson. I have not spoken to Nick Spiropoulos. I've talked to an attorney who's intervened in the Mat-Su's effort or quasi-effort to regulate trails in these areas. And I'm told, and understand, I come from the courtroom where none of this could be said, right, because it's all hearsay. But I'm told that Mr. Spiropoulos concluded that the borough could not do something, even if it wanted to, that only the state could intervene here. Now, whether he's right, I don't know. Whether what I was told is right, I don't know. I suspect the second one is correct, that he believes the borough can't intervene. But whether it can't intervene, I don't know. But that's the interesting Title 29 question that was asked that I'm going to look into.
Okay, thank you both. I was just trying to get some understanding on where all that was.
Vice Chair Westlake.
Oh, yes, and through the chair, thank you. One of the documents that we did get was something by Zaz Hollander, and it's datelined as January 8th on here. Mm-hmm. As suburbia replaces frontier, Mat-Su considers restricting trapping for the first time. Well, on the same one, on two out of the eight pages here, there is, ma'am, and I'm addressing you on the line. And there it says numerous Alaskan towns and cities already restrict trapping in some way, including Anchorage, Valdez, Fairbanks, and Juneau. But efforts to address trail conflicts outside city limits have run into opposition around the state. So I know where you're coming from, but I think what you're seeing are some, like you just spoken directly about Fairbanks, is maybe how they model theirs to make local control their option. So thank you.
Well, if I may add, I would like to state that if this were being legislated on a state level, there would be uniformity, and there wouldn't be these questions of what when you travel between one borough to the next, and when you have an organization that's completely unfamiliar with trails that a group like mine is targeting to restrict trapping, and they go after it regardless. They don't even know the situation, and they just, in Randy Zarkey's words, stifle. That's not a very productive way to get change, to make change happen, and to make fair change happen.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Mitchell? I do want to get to Ms. O'Brien, who's in the room. All right. Hearing none.
Could I end by saying one thing?
Yes, if it's one thing.
I would like to say that this state just recently took the progressive step of considering mandating that pets' well-being needs to be considered in cases of divorce. Well, I would like this state to consider a pet's well-being while they're with their families.
Okay. I think I understand your point. Ms. Mitchell, thanks for your testimony. At this time, I'd like to invite Ms. O'Brien to testify, and then we will be holding this bill to a later date. And we're going to leave public testimony open, which means it's going to happen also at a later date. Ms. O'Brien, can you put your name on the record and give us your testimony?
Pat O'Brien, and I've lived in Alaska for almost 50 years, starting out in Huna almost 50 years ago. It was really bush then, and the rest of the time here in Juneau. And I've always been interested in the outdoors. So when I became aware of trapping issues through neighbors who've had problems with trapping, and their dogs, I decided I'd do something about it, and I'm the most recent failure through the Board of Game. I wrote a proposal last year to the Board of the Game, which was rejected. And I'm not following my notes, which I better follow because I'll forget something important. When I submitted Proposal 80, it had a 200-foot setback similar to Section 2 in this bill. And in March of 2016, it was very quickly. I mean, I don't even think they spent a sentence on it. It was just rejected. Section 1 of this bill addresses trapping tags. And at the same Board of Game meeting, and by the way, Juneau did have a rule for trapping tags before this meeting. It's gone. Proposal 78 by the Alaska Trappers Association was quickly passed. It proposed removal of all requirements for identification tags on traps and snares and a statement of legislative intent in opposition to future implementation of any regulation that would require trap ID tags. So,
can I interrupt you? And
yes.
I apologize. But we've heard comments, and there's some wisdom in them, that these are local issues. But what I'm hearing you say is that Juneau had a local policy.
Until last March.
And then a statewide commission said, you can't have your local policy.
That's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then this, to follow up, the same statewide commission wanted us to produce a letter of intent saying tags are bad? Is that your understanding?
Well, quote, this is it, legislative intent in opposition to future implementation of any regulation that would require trap ID tags. I'm not sure what it means, but that's what they, their
action. Okay. Thank you. You can proceed. Sorry for the interruption.
No, that's fine. I fully support this sponsor substitute for House Bill 40, or it's not sponsor anymore, it's committee, and provide the above information to point out that you are going to get you're going to hear a lot from trappers, and I'm just kind of letting you know that it can get ugly, just letting you know. With regard to Section 1, in supporting their proposal to the Board of Game, the Trappers Association wrote, trap identification tags are cumbersome, ineffective, and can lead to interference with lawful trapping. They wrote, proponents of ID tags claim that the requirement will make trappers more honest and conscious of when and where they set traps. Once trap ID tags are required, enforcement officers feel entitled to check the traps and snares for presence of the tags. In the process of handling the traps or snares, they often render the traps ineffective by disturbing the immediate area and or contaminating the gear with human scent. at our local advisory committee to the Board of Game, one reasonable crab fisherman noted, we have to place ID tags on our crab pots. Why shouldn't trappers be required to tag their traps? But he was outvoted at that AC meeting, and the AC voted to back the trappers.
And that's the advisory committee for the
record. I mean, right. He was right, however. It's only reasonable to require trap tags. I remember an incident where traps in Juneau were right next, within the last couple of years, right next to the buildings here in Ock Bay. Well, you know Ock Bay, there are a lot of people around. You have a trap right next to a building, that's a problem. But it did have an ID on it, so that trapper was caught. And without that ID on it, I think he'd be willing to give up the trap. So I strongly support IDs on traps. I think it's only prudent. Finally, the Trappers Association did also say we are concerned about the potential for uneven enforcement, and for every law and regulation, that's always a concern. So that's kind of moot. Section 2. I'd like to talk about. This section is really well crafted compared to what I did last year that failed. Last year, what I tried to do, I looked around, I thought, okay, how can I handle this for all the reasons you've been kind of bouncing around here? So I looked at the state regulations on bear baiting, and I thought, okay, they instituted bear baiting. They wanted to keep people safe, so I built the idea around traps and the bear baiting rules as a model for the placement of traps and snares, and that might better protect people and dogs. This proposal is far less complex. The bear baiting rules are pretty complex, and it directs the Department of Fish and Game to further identify areas where trapping is prohibited. And just for an illustration on the 200 feet, which I used in my draft, that's 40 paces of an average person. So that kind of gives you an idea of how far you'd have to go off the trail. Subsection C, I support totally, and I think it's brilliant, stating that it's not a defense that another person was violating a local ordinance relating to the restraint of voice control of a domestic animal. Many dogs, even on a leash, are going to jerk off that leash when they smell fresh meat. And that happened to my neighbor. He had dogs. They weren't on a leash, but I walked with those dogs an awful lot. I loved those dogs. And they were pulled by the strong scent uphill. They ran up this hill where two, maybe three, I don't remember whether it was two or three, skinned beavers were nailed to the tree, and below it were a whole bunch of traps. So two of the dogs got caught in more than one trap. And there were vet bills, and the trapper did pay the vet bills, but it was not a pretty picture, and so that was a major motivator for my trying to do something about this. I'll close by noting that the ADF&G trapping regulation booklet, page 6, I think I have it in here, but that's all right. It contains this advice. Now, this is ADF&G advice. Act responsibly as a trapper and conservationist by trapping in ways to minimize conflict between trapping and other users, avoid high recreational use areas. Avoid situations where you might catch a domestic dog or cat, such as dog mushers or other people. The Trapper's Code of Ethics contains no similar provision. It's all about trapping. So with that, I'll answer any questions if you'd like.
Yes, we have one, Ms. O'Brien, from Representative Birch.
Well, thank you for your testimony and some of the background that I was certainly unaware of, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Has there ever been any consideration towards use of maybe like the RF tags, radio frequency tags, which allow kind of a remote monitoring, or you can actually monitor something without touching it, you know? Anyway, just thinking, I do like the idea of tagging traps, just like they tag crab pots, you know, so you know somebody abandons one, you understand it, and it's there. But I just was curious about the RF tags.
Well, through the chair, Representative Birch, I've read about those too, And I've actually talked with people about them. The big deal is cost. They're very expensive.
They are.
And they're relatively new in the market, so I think they're a great idea. It tells the trapper when his trap's gone off, and he could go right out, and the animal wouldn't suffer, but dollars.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Ms. Johnson. Representative Johnson.
For you. Thank you.
Okay.
So would, on the ID, are you anticipating something that would be, say, like when you get your trapping license, your license is number whatever, 95, say, and so every one of your traps you would actually just paint that number on, or are you thinking about having traps actually registered?
Well, I think for each trap, the bill speaks to this a little bit, but I think for each trap you'd have to purchase a tag that would be coded by with a correlation to the owner of the trap. But that may, that's my best answer.
Thank you. Okay. I just, I mean, I can see how it wouldn't, if you were given a number and you just make sure that number's on every one of your traps, that's not that expensive. Where if you have to get an ID tag and put it on your trap, then that ends up being, and then they have to register, it gets to be a lot more complicated. That's all I was wondering. Thank you.
Representative Westlake.
Yes, and through the chair, I'd be interested to see how Anchorage and the rest of them did it as well. And I'm hoping that we do listen to the Board of Game and see what's been taking so long, if they have any conclusions and why they've arrived. It would be something, I think, very good for us. Thank you.
Anyone else have a question for Ms. O'Brien? Seeing and hearing none, thank you for your testimony. With that, we are going to... We're going to leave public testimony open, and we're going to close out for the day House Bill 40.
Uh-huh. You don't mean to do that, but we're going to move on.
And we're going to move on to House Bill 6. And I know I haven't left a lot of time for it, but we heard a presentation, I think in, must have been a week to 10 days ago. We have a number of people that are ready to testify on House Bill 6. So unless there's any objection, we're going to hear from some of them, if not as many as we can get through. So the first I have here is Scott Lapine.
Lapine. Yes, sir. My name is... Scott Lapine, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. And to the new members of the House, welcome and appreciate your service. I'm currently president of the Mat-Su Trails Council, a nonprofit multimodal trails organization that's been in the Mat-Su Borough for about 20 years. We have a long history with trails and considerable history with the ESCA area. We're part of a 10-year effort assisting in the development of the multi-use trails up to the waterfalls. The construction of the hiking trail, and then we rebuilt a section of the ATV trail as well as put signage up for all three types of use, hiking, ATV, and off-road vehicles. We also brushed about 30 miles of trail between Sutton and Buffalo Mine Road using our heavy equipment with a dedicated flail mower. I've served on Governor Noll's track board, the state's ORTAB board, and I was also invited to be a member on the Slipper Lake Jonesville Citizens Action Committee. The committee that met with the intent to produce this legislation, the primary concern, as I remember it, was public safety. Shooting as being the number one thing, uncontrolled shooting. There were meetings, members from the Alaska State Troopers, DNR, Mining Land and Water, Mining Reclamation, all attended meetings and explained that, you know, the state troopers are spread thin and DNR really has no enforcement authority for activities in the area. During the period of meetings, Connect River Public Use Area was held out as an example of what would be described as a somewhat lawless, out-of-control area for which legislation was passed and a management plan was created with a fiscal note and authorizing DNR specific enforcement authorities. And we felt that that was a good model to follow, seemed to have made a significant positive change in the activities at Kinnick and improved the recreation, reduced waste, littering, etc. As part of the meetings with the Citizens Slipper Lakes Citizens Action Committee, there was a pretty strong feeling that they didn't want to place restrictions or change the types of recreation that was occurring in the area, whether it be hunting, ATVs, off-road vehicles, hiking, equestrian, etc. They felt that the attraction to the area was something that they didn't want to change. The Mining Reclamation Group has invested several $1 million in the area, creating sort of quasi-campgrounds with fire rings around Slipper Lake. On a three-day weekend in the summertime, whether it be Memorial Day, Labor Day, or 4th of July, our organization has done vehicle camper counts and have regularly seen numbers in excess of 400 individual campsites around the lake during those weekends. By far the majority of those folks are recreating with ATVs, side-by-sides, Jeeps, motorcycles, etc.
Mr. Lapine, Andy Josephson here in Juneau, can you tell us, we want to hear from some others too, can you tell us, do you broadly support this or do you?
Yep, that's about to wrap it up, sir. Okay. And with that, we produced this legislation that I do support. I am concerned over amendments number 4 and 5 that the chair has suggested relating to motorized use, and would appreciate if you would, as a body, oppose amendments 4 and 5, leave the motorized components as they were originally drafted. Okay. And with that, thank you for your time.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Lapine? Yes, Mr. Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, through the chair, Scott Lapine, your reasons for opposing the amendments?
Okay, let me get them right here. I got them marked. Mr. Representative Rauscher, through the chair, amendment number 4 adds a statement on trails designated and constructed for their use. My concern is that the cost of construction, first off, there's only maybe at most 10 miles of ATV trail that have officially been constructed for ATV use in the Matsu Borough. All the trails we use are legacy mining, forestry, trails that were actually some of them put in by trappers, access areas. So with the state's fiscal situation, it's extremely unlikely that we will have any funding to construct trails specifically for motorized use. Amendment number 5 is a comment about to correct existing damage and minimize future. So I'm all about minimizing future damage in the trails that we maintain. That's what it's all about, is to try and put in proper drainage, relocate them within the easements as allowed. But the cost of correcting existing damage is another piece where it takes a lot of money, and I don't see the sources for that. So it concerns me that we will lose access or be denied the opportunity to create new trails because of money.
Mr. Lapine, this is Andy Josephson. Let me respond to just the second one. There's no money in the budget currently to enforce the new management plan anyway. So isn't the amendment you speak of, where it's quoted to correct existing damage and minimize future damage, isn't that purely aspirational? Isn't that just sort of something the management plan should? It's not like it's going to be a law that says this is going to happen tomorrow or else. It's a goal.
Sir, my concern would be that when it's in the legislation, it is law and would have been interpreted as such. And if we moved it to the management plan and included those kinds of details there, it would be more appropriate and it would allow a certain degree of flexibility. My concern is people will look at this and interpret it literally.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because it is legislation, it is law.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Lapine? Okay. Yes. There are.
Never mind.
Okay.
Take away.
All right. Mr. Lapine, did you say what you wanted to say? You opposed two amendments. You support the bill generally. Is that?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
I'm going to, at this time, I'm going to come back to the phone lines, but I do want to give two individuals in this room, room 124 in Juneau, a chance to speak because they're physically here. One would be Lynn Woods. Ms. Woods, can you put your name on the record, please, and give us your testimony?
Thank you. My name is Lynn Woods, and special thanks to co-chairs Representative Josephson and Tarr for allowing me to speak to you today. I'm here to ask for your support on House Bill 6 and to give a special thanks to Representative Rauscher for introducing this important legislation. Sorry, I had to run up the hill. I work here in town during the session. So, anyways, the members of the Sutton community will benefit, obviously, from this legislation, as well as users of all public land in the Jonesville area, and for me, a lifelong resident who lives on the Jonesville Mine Road. Creating this public use area will provide DNR, the Matsu Borough, and our community a much-needed tool to effectively manage the area for the benefit of all. I was an elected official, district running the Matsu Borough, when we created the Knik River public use area. That legislation was in response to the very same concerns that we are having now in Sutton. There was lawless behavior, unsafe shooting, burning cars, major disturbances to peace and general use of the area for recreation, fishing, hunting, hiking, and other commonly generally allowed uses. We need this legislation, and I urge you to move it through your committee with unanimous yays. My only regret is that we don't have funding to put some actual people on the ground, but I think our community and other groups within the Matsu Borough are very creative, and this tool will enable us to get started, open up the door for grants and other ways to reclaim that land. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. We have a question from Representative Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say it's good to see you again.
thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We've had a lot of discussion about this, and your comments are very, very much appreciated.
Yeah. Thank you. I feel there's our growth in the Matsu Borough is a known fact to all, but many people come from Anchorage, the military bases, to our areas, and the Jonesville public use area is a small area, but the impacts are huge, and we just gotta get some control on that. I kind of need my sleep in my old age, so I'm ready for it.
Ms. Woods, Representative Rauscher has a question for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Through the chair to Lynn. Lynn Woods, since we only have a few minutes left, actually a little less than that, could you just give everybody an explanation of how a public use area is needed to accomplish where we want to go after that? I'm not sure everybody quite understands that process, that this is not the end but the beginning.
Right. With the authority of a public use area, a management plan can be established. I was part of a volunteer planning area when we looked, I start dating myself so bad, you know, over 20 years ago, where, I mean, there's clearly Moose Creek, Granite Creek, Kinnick River drainages, and numerous small creeks in there. You got your fish and wildlife habitat. Access to the recreation areas is important. There's been plans done, and with DNR having a public use area, then we can bring this update, modernize this. I know the Mat-Su Borough will be willing to help on that. I'll go down there and make sure they do. But it gives DNR a tool to go forward with that. Maybe they can contract with certain aspects of it. Maybe the camping can be contracted out. We can generate revenue and in turn generate money for that.
Ms. Trails. Ms. Woods, did you have an affiliation that was relevant to this bill?
Not to this bill, okay. No, other right. than I live on the road that they all drive by.
That's important. That's important. all right. I have a question for Nancy Mead, if she was going to offer testimony or simply be available to answer questions.
Questions.
Okay. All right. Then with that, what we're going to do for anyone online, I meant to get back to you, but, you know, time is what it is. So the current plan of the co-chairs is to hear from the Alaska Oil and Gas Commission on Wednesday, to introduce a possible bill on Wednesday or ask for authority to introduce a bill, and on Wednesday night to hear the testimony of HGR 5, that's Representative Westlake's, and to hear more testimony on HB 6, Representative Rauscher's bill. The plan is to sort of dispose one way or those with those bills. I have my own opinion that we're going to have great success, but I can't promise anything, on Wednesday night. So there will be two meetings on Wednesday. I know you're excited about that, and I share that excitement. Any questions for the good of the order? With that, we will adjourn at 3:02.